This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Crabs and beans are unquestionably essential to Southern cuisine. Here in North Carolina, that means everything from soft-shelled crabs down east to baked beans and a slab of pulled pork. Cookbook series Savor the South looks at some of the South's most delectable foods and drinks. The latest batch of cookbooks includes one about beans and field peas, and another about crabs and oysters. Both are going to be out Monday. Sandra Gutierrez is a journalist and food writer and the author of Beans and Field Peas Cookbook, and she's back on the show. Hello, Sandra, and welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Bill Smith is back as well. He's the chef at Crook's Corner in Chapel Hill and the author of Crabs and Oysters. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Frank. Hola, Sandra.
Hola, Bill.
Bill, you're in the kitchen, right there.
I am in the kitchen. I'm in the weeds in the kitchen, actually, which is why I can't be with you right this minute.
Well, okay. I'll let you sort that out. But before you do, tell us about growing up down east and catching crabs and eating oysters. I mean, this is really comfort food for you, right?
It is. It's my neck of the woods down there. Yeah, I grew up with that. We did, in fact, do a lot of crabbing when I was little. My grandmother always took a house down at the beach. I mean, we grew up near the beach, but we still would take a house at the beach, even though it was nearby. And we would crab, and we learned to catch them and cook them and pick them and all kinds of stuff. To me, that says home.
What's interesting is that for most of us, they're kind of exotic, expensive seafood.
But I guess now. They used to be free food.
Free food.
When I was growing up, yeah.
Well, Sandra, tell us about the history of Southern food. You know, beans, we think about black-eyed peas and butter beans and all that stuff, and that's about as South as it comes. But, of course, that's an international cuisine as well, right?
Well, it is. Beans and field peas happen to be enjoyed all over the world. But here in the South, of course, they are like the mainstay of Southern tables. And I like to joke that it took a Latina to come teach Southerners how to cook their beans and field peas or where they come from. But there's a beautiful history accompanying each, both beans and field peas. And they are some of the most ancient foods really in the world.
Yeah, and what I didn't know until I picked up this book, I always thought lima beans and butter beans, you know, come on, it's the same thing. They're just, I moved south. They changed the name on me. But no,
they're not, actually. There's three groups in the beans and field peas. You have the Vigna unguiculata, which are the family of the black-eyed peas, and which we call, you know, cowpeas also here in the south. And then you have the sieva, which is where the lima beans come from. It's a completely different kind of pea. It's actually one that was domesticated in South America. They are actually native of Peru, hence the name, you know, lima beans. And of course, we have the beans, which are fasciolus, which are completely different. So none of them have anything to do with the other. They're very distinct categories.
But for cooking and eating, kind of the same?
No. Almost the same, yes, except that beans always have to be dried before cooking and eating, and peas actually can be used both fresh and dried. So that would be the main difference between both.
Bill, when you're at Crook's Corner and trying to figure out what to put on the menu, how much do crabs and oysters figure into your mix?
Well, they're both really seasonal foods. We're in crab season right now. We're the tail end of soft-shell crab season. And then oysters start, as they say, in the R months, and that's September and through the winter. So there's always something using those things on the menu all the time, although it varies as the year goes on. We have soft-shell crabs in the summer. We do crab soup sometimes, and we're sort of famous for our fried oysters. We do those all winter.
All winter. And there's a recipe for traditional oyster stew that's about the simplest thing I've ever seen in my life.
It is. It's great, too. And it's weird how sometimes something so good can be so completely so simple. It's just, they're just simmered in milk, basically, with some butter.
A little bit of butter. Wow.
And we grew up on that. That was like, and sometimes even when we were ill, that was considered sick room food, too. But they're just good all the time.
A little butter.
It can be easier.
Butter in the bottom of each bowl.
In the bottom of each bowl.
And then simmer those oysters in a little milk. And
just till they curl. Just till they curl. Oh. And then salt and pepper. And then there's a discussion about whether scallions or not. It depends on whose house you're at.
big fight over that.
Yeah.
And also, important directions on how to clean a soft shell crab.
Yeah, that's it's not hard to do. It was hard to describe to somebody. That was quite a chore, actually. Particularly if I didn't have one right in front of me. I've done so many of them, but yeah, it's not hard to do. They're soft and they can't get you, unlike hard crabs, which will try to bite you when you're dealing with them. But You snip off the face with scissors, which isn't very nice, and then you cut out the lungs with scissors, which isn't very nice, and you squeeze out the guts, and then you rinse them underwater.
Yeah, that is the hard part. It's just
when you go out fishing, I mean, that's the way it works.
But you really need to do all that, especially get some of that stuff out to get some of that.
I don't think it's poison, but it's not good for you.
It doesn't taste that great.
Yeah, right.
Sandra, so many different types. You know, we've talked a little bit about those beans and peas and some of the explanations and differences. In terms of cuisine, do you have a sense of which stand alone better and which are better sort of cooked and slow cooked in meat and with sauces and that sort of thing?
Well, actually, beans and field peas both do great when cooked with a little piece of what we call here in the South seasoning, which can be just some fat back or a ham hock or something like that. But it's been actually been written about that in the 1500s, the French were already eating beans with some kind of pork in it. So it's a tradition that comes for a very long time. So no, really, you know, with sauces, I wouldn't think that sauces are something that you would normally find in a lot of peas and bean dishes, unless you're talking about vinaigrettes or you're talking about a thick tomato-y barbecue sauce like we have here in the South and sweet sauces like that.
And again, the sort of what we thought was native and what has really come from other places, I mean, even barbecue itself, which I always thought was derived from barbecue and was inherently South, but no.
No, it wasn't. Actually, Christopher Columbus discovers that the process of barbacoa in the Dominican Republic, or La Isla de la Española, as it was known back then, that Taino Indians were already skewering food through sticks and cooking it directly over fire. But I like to say that the Southerners perfected barbecue to what it is today, and that's where I'm leaving it. I'm not getting into which
you
is better.
Get into that fight?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we call it barbecue. The heirloom peas. Now, I didn't know about the Emily Lee pea. Tell us about that.
That's Emily Lee peas are beautiful. Yeah. They're tiny, and when they're fresh, they come in variegated colors, so you can find them from black to yellow and green. They're tiny. They're so succulent. They're still hard to find if you're not in certain areas where farmers are growing them, but they're so, so delicious. And one of my favorite ways of cooking them is just, you know, boiling them and then just adding some butter and something like a fresh herb, whether it's basil or parsley. And that's usually what I love to do at the beginning of the season.
Are all beans sort of interchangeable in the sense that if I wanted to make, you know, baked beans with molasses and that sort of thing, does it really? I mean, generally, if you look at recipes, it calls for white beans, but does it much matter?
Well, I don't think it matters much that the color that you would use, but tradition does call for the white bean or the red bean up north, for instance. Mm-hmm. But here in the South, it would be the white bean that we would use. So it's really whatever you want to do. What I find with beans is that the size matters as to what you're cooking, because some of them are little, like the white beans that we use or the navy beans are small, but some, like the kidney beans, would be too big for a barbecue plate, and they remain a little bit meatier, and you want the beans to be creamy and to fall apart in the sauce.
What about soaking? Is that important, and what does it have any effect on the beans?
Well, soaking is interesting. I grew up with the tradition of soaking beans in Latin America, and we did that to remove the enzymes that produce the not nice side effect of eating beans. But there are two sides, you know, one side that says you don't need to soak them and the other that says soak them. I like to soak particularly black beans because you remove some of the acidity in the beans as well. And then when you have your liquor and you cook it down and you have these delicious caldos, as we call in Latin America, or pot liquor here, it's very richly and smoothly flavored.
Bill, where did you get most of your recipes? Are these things that you use at Crook's Corner or things that you found from other sources, combination of both?
Some of both. I put most of the things that we use at Crook's Corner are in the book. But what I did, and this turned out to be really a lot of fun, was I went through community cookbooks and church cookbooks from all over the South. And I looked for things that were unusual and things that I'd never heard of before. And because I see those as sort of cultural repositories, honestly. People make fun of them, but I've always respected them. And so I found all kinds of stuff. Great cookbooks from Mississippi and Louisiana, here from North Carolina. My grandmother's church one from New Bern, North Carolina. So it's about at least half that, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun to do.
Do you collect those books?
I sort of do. I mean, you have to watch out or your house will fill up with them because there's lots of them. Mm-hmm. But I got a lot, yeah.
All right. You know, we talked a little bit about cleaning crabs. Oysters are the hard things for me. When I get those things fresh, man, shucking those things is a lot of work, right?
You just have to do it a lot. You have to be careful not to cut yourself. It's the main thing, and you have to clean them well first. I say in the book to take them out in the yard and spray them off with a hose. That's really the best thing to do. And then it's just practice. You know, there are a couple of different theories about it, but the best way is to get an oyster knife, a knife made for it, because it's the safest thing to use. And then you just work it into the hinge, you know, and they'll give. But you just have to do a bunch.
Yeah. Do you scrub them? Hose them down and scrub them, right?
Yeah. It depends. Most people, when they sell them, will have cleaned them some, but you can never get everything off of them. You can, you know. So, and you don't want the grit to get into the oyster itself. So,
right.
Yeah, it's sort of a combo. The hose is the best way to start, though.
What's your favorite crab recipe?
Oh, Lord, I think... I don't know. I actually got right tired of crab writing this book. I eat it so much, but I think really still plain fried soft shell crab is probably my favorite, honestly. And you know, with almost nothing done to it at all.
Yeah, and apart from the grisly cleaning process that you described,
I got over that years ago.
It's really pretty simple, right? You dredge them and just fry them.
Pretty much.
How about oysters?
Oysters. I actually like raw oysters.
Yeah.
With hardly any, maybe lemon juice and. And maybe some horseradish or something.
That recipe for oyster fritters, though, looks awfully good.
That is, you know, and that I don't know if it's still there or not. The River Forest Manor down in Belhaven, that isn't their recipe, because I couldn't find theirs, but they were famous for that. So I tried to recreate it as best I could from memory. But the only problem with it is that when you mince up oysters, there's all this liquid and it varies from time to time. So you've got to be really sort of on your toes and observant as you try to make it, because sometimes they're really watery and sometimes they're not, and that sort of affects the runniness of your batter. But you just have to watch as you go and adjust.
Do you try to save that, or do you let as much of that?
No, when you mince
possible?
Them up, no, you don't.
Yeah.
When you're using them in the stew or something, if you're using them whole, you would try to save it because it's good. But when you've got them all chopped up, I mean, if you do it, you'll see what I mean. It's just sort of messy. But,
yeah, it's kind of messy and not pretty either.
Not pretty. No, right. That was the only minced oyster recipe I put in that book, because it's just sort of unappealing and.
But
there are lots of them, though.
It also includes corn, kernels of corn, which I think makes any
fruit
better.
I found that in a recipe from Maryland and sort of added that in. And that gives it some – it's nice. It's cool. It gives it some heft.
Sandra, what about you? Some of your favorite recipes in beans and field peas?
Well, I love the recipes that my southern friends, gave me in the book. I love the purple hulls with the bacon vinaigrette that Perry Magnus gave me. And, of course the butter bean corn and tomato salad is a classic here in the South, with a little bit of bacon. But one of my favorite ones would be the black beans and broth, because that's what I grew up with. And we used to drink the liquor, the black, beautiful broth. From cooking the beans, just like that, with some herb croutons on top. And I love that when I came to the South, and here in the South, you also, revere that liquor and you eat it with pieces of cornbread, you know. So it was that connection, the same idea, just different ingredients.
The purple hull pea, that was something I discovered, actually living in Northern Virginia, going to the food, going to farmers markets there. Man, that's a delicious pea.
It's super delicious. It's a crowder pea, so they're very tightly put together in the pod. They're beautiful to look at. The pods can be purple or all the way down to green with speckled purple. They're gorgeous, and they unfortunately lose some of their color, or a lot of their color, when they cook, and they produce a very medium delicious liquor. I love that they have a little bit more starchiness than the creamer peas, so they're ideal for salads. But I have a recipe in the book for a purple hull pea and bene, or sesame seed hummus, that is to die for.
Yeah, hummus made with purple hull pea. What's great about them is they're as sweet as a sweet pea. So, like, you know, those peas that you used to get and feed your children and would follow all over the floor. That's sweet, but the texture is much richer and grainy.
It's sturdier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has a great bite. I love them.
Couple of great recipes there. Yeah, so this distinction between the lima bean and the butter bean, by the way, it's set the Twitterverse a Twitter.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean, people are, what do you mean they're not the same?
Yeah, no, they're not the same thing. Lima beans are, I know they look similar, but lima beans are actually just a sieva, different, completely different generation or family of beans. And the butter beans, of course, you know, are classic. They're green, they're beautiful, they're delicious. There's probably one of the first peas that was found in the United States when Harriet came and he wrote about peace, and he was the first, one of the first people to come with the trips that they were doing, investigating Americas, they found butter beans, and they were finding them cooked in succotash. So they looked like English peas, so it wasn't something scary for them to try. Of course, they're not as spherical as what we know today as green peas, but they're completely different. So lima beans are a little bit more toothsome than butter beans. Butter beans are just, to me, one of the most delicate peas that we have. And even peas come in different groupings. When you talk about field peas, you're talking about black-eyed peas. You're talking about creamers or crowders or field peas. And the difficulty here in the South is that many people throughout generations just simply call them field peas. So you never know what they're talking about. So I try to go a little bit into that and separate them a little bit into categories so people know exactly what the differences are.
Hey, what about, I've just discovered the glory of the pressure cooker for cooking beans. Do you recommend this? That has replaced the pot for me.
Yeah, well, pressure cookers, if you know how to use them, are fantastic because you can cook beans in half an hour. You know, you don't have to go through the whole hour and a half to 2 hour process. I do both. I think whatever is easier for you. And the crock pot also works for beans if you can leave them there all day.
The thing I noticed with the pressure cooker is that I get, particularly for things like chickpeas and some of the more difficult ones that have a little husk even after you cook them,
yes, a kernel.
There's less of that. There's less of that sort of peeling away if I use the pressure cooker.
It's the speed.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the speed at which you can cook them.
We don't do any seafood in a pressure cooker, though, I would think, Bill.
I never have heard of doing that. But
actually, I will tell you, if you're going to – well, here's the thing. If you want to – for those of you who like steamed clams or steamed oysters – do it in the pressure cooker for just like 5 minutes, and it maintains – well, it maintains the flavor. It doesn't – and also the broth stays stays tastier because it doesn't boil away. Little tip. Well, that's your next – that would be your next next book.
I'll give it a shot. Yeah.
and frying, that's the other question, the difference between fried. You said you preferred raw, and I think a lot of people do. Do you think it really kind of – it's not an oyster anymore or a clam or a shrimp when you fry it?
Oh no, I love those too. But you know, it's different. It's the batter, it's the breading of the batter you choose. A lot of people complain about too much breading on things. I'm quite the opposite. I love that. I love the crust. So, it's just a different preparation. But I think they're both equally good. I like raw ones, but I'm not. You know, I love fried ones too. So,
Bill, your book is called Crabs and Oysters. You got a recipe for roasted beets in here.
I know that. Well, that's because I kept finding these recipes for pickled oysters everywhere. And while I was testing the recipes, I was doing stuff here at work, and I was the pickled oysters needed something. And so we turned them into a salad, and we tossed them with roasted beets. And so I thought, well, just put that in there, too.
Great recipe. Yeah. And, you know, we think about beans again, these things either loose in salads or in, you know, sort of baked bean casserole kind of a thing. But you, Sandra, have a recipe in here for bean pie, Muslim bean pie.
Yes.
That's a delicious thing.
It's delicious, and that's I owe that recipe to my friend Nancy McDermott, also beloved author here in the South and dear friend of mine, and she came up with two pie recipes, and it's a very interesting history, and I wish people would read about it more. And it tastes like sweet potato almost, like you really can't tell. But the other thing I write about in the book are the green bean family. You know, the green beans of the South are so different from the green beans that we find in the supermarket, you know.
Yeah, tell us about that. That's an interesting discovery.
Well, the green beans in the South really develop flavor and their texture by cooking them a long time. You cannot eat them al dente like you do haricot verts. And we have wonderful beans here. We have the Kentucky Wonders. We have the greasy beans, the shucky beans, of course. And I just find it fascinating that people in the South cook them for a long period of time the same way that you would cook beans or field peas with a little bit of fat of pork, something, sometimes a turkey wing, a smoked turkey wing in there. And one of my favorite marriages that I find in the South is the ham, the potatoes, and the beans together in the same pot, and they just melt. We have string beans as well, you know, that you have to remove. But the prized part about Southern beans is that they actually have the immature bean inside, which gives it a lot more protein content than your regular beans that we find in the supermarket today. So if you've never gone to a farmer's market and enjoyed a pot of slow-cooked beans, string beans, I would highly recommend that you would.
Great stuff. Thank you both. Sandra Gutierrez, journalist and food writer and author of The Beans and Field Peas Cookbook. Bill Smith is the chef at Crook's Corner in Chapel Hill and the author of Crabs and Oysters. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
LA26 in Durham host a book release party on Monday at 4 o'clock. To find out details, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, Charlotte-based poet Mary Kratt. Stay tuned.